And now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Dell.
My name's Dell, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'll be honest with you, I was trying to plan my escape because I'm kind of nervous tonight. You know, it's been a little while since I actually, you know, shared at a meeting. I mean, I shared a couple meetings just recently, but I've been so busy at work that I regularly don't make that many meetings like I used to in my first year and a half of sobriety. You know, which I felt was the most important thing in my life at that time and still to this day. Because, you know, I was creating my own deathbed through alcoholism, you know, through my disease, my physical and mental disease that I'm coming to the grips with a new sponsor. You know, I recently just got myself a new sponsor to take me through the steps precisely written in the book. You know, I had a sponsor when I first started out in this program, and he took me through the 12x12, which was good, you know, and I was able to go through them. But I felt recently in the last 5 months that that I needed to reexamine a lot of my life and go back through the steps. So I found somebody that's close to me that I believe that I can trust that will take me precisely that how I need to go through these steps. So, like I said, my name's Dell. I'm an alcoholic, and let me start off by saying that I started drinking at the age of 10. You know, I didn't start drinking full blown like I did when I was 24, but I had my first drink at the age of 10. I grew up on the north side of Visalia. I went to Crowley Elementary School. I lived off of Perez Street, and I had met some friends there and everything, and then I wanted to fit in. You know, I wanted to, you know, because I wanted to be, you know, I guess somebody that I thought I wasn't, you know. And so we ditched school one day, and I picked up a bottle from them, and I experienced my first drink. You know, and for some odd reason, you know, I guess the more I drank it, you know, I ended up getting sick. But for some odd reason, I must have enjoyed it, because from that moment on, you know, every time alcohol was around, you know, I wanted it, you know. My grandmother's house is like probably, you know, a stone throw away right over here off of Bridge Street, you know, and I grew up there too. You know, I love my grandmother, and, you know, and I grew up with my cousins, and I used to go over there all the time. And sorry, I'm kind of nervous, but I would hang out with them and stuff, and not too far over here was a 7-Up company. You know, they would bottle or they would distribute the 7-Up and other stuff, and we found out that the trucks had carried wine coolers. So, you know, that also began my stealing spree, you know, like becoming a thief in a way. You know, we would jump the wall over there and we would get the wine coolers and stuff, and we'd take them in the back of my grandmother's house and everything, and we'd drink them. And then finally she caught on, you know, she found the wine coolers, so she would, you know, throw them away, have us pour out, whatever. So we just decided to hide them over here in the ice house. And it's funny that I'm sharing at the ice house, but, you know, we would hide them over here, and so we could go over here and drink them and stuff. And then one day my cousin got caught, you know, stealing there, and so we stopped doing that because, you know, we don't want to go to jail, at least, or at juvie at the time and stuff. But that didn't stop my drinking. You know, that was just the beginning of it. And one other thing was, we would walk from our house over there off of Perez Street here, and there was it's still there, Houston Market. And we would go in there, and we'd buy, like, you know, those funny cigarettes, you know, marijuana cigarettes and everything, and from behind the counter. And then there was a Lopez Liquor, and I remember going to Lopez Liquor and found out that back then you could write your own, you know, your own note. You know, you could say it from your mom or your dad. You know, you could buy, like, your own liquor. You know, I'm old, but I'm not that old. But I mean, You can buy your own liquor and stuff. So we found that one out, you know. And so you know that was, you know, something that we used to do. And we would go from there to the Birdland, and there was like, because I had friends that lived in Birdland that we would drink with, I went to school with, and we'd walk through where the Food for Less is, and we'd walk through the grape, you know, there's the grapevines and everything, and sometimes a farmer would come out and he'd try to shoot us with the salt rock and everything and stuff like that, you know, which was kind of fun, you know. I kind of felt it like an adventure, you know. I mean, that's when I think, when that, you know, wanting to become dangerous situation came about and stuff, you know, is getting away with like murder and stuff. The other thing was that Fairway Market was over there, and there was a wall. There's like, we used to call them the projects, that some people call them that, and there was like a little cutting open of the brick wall and stuff, and the Budweiser trucks would come before they would lock them back in the day and everything or something like that, because they probably caught on about us and stuff. And we'd open up the doors and the guy would go in and we'd steal like beer from there too and stuff. So, you know, I mean, I had a pretty good time back then, you know, as a little kid. You know, I mean, not to say that, you know, it's something that we should do and we should teach our children and everything, because, you know, because that's the last thing I want to teach the two children that are in my life. But let me fast forward, because, you know, I know I have probably a lot of time, and I never had this much time. So when I turned 17, you know, I rode a skateboard, you know. I still ride a skateboard. I don't know, it's like, yeah, he's a 40, you know, 45-year-old skateboarder. That's kind of crazy, you know, once you grow up. But I rode a, you know, I was riding a skateboard, and the YMCA had a you know, a vert ramp and stuff, and I'd hang out over there with all my friends, and we'd drink, smoke our weed, we'd skate, do whatever and stuff. And one night we were drinking, you know, like High Life 32s, and it just happened to be the same, you know, time that the Tulare Fairground was going on, and we decided, hey, let's all go to the fairground, you know, because that's what people do around here. They go to the fair or something like that, because there's not a lot to do in Visalia, at least that's what I used to think, you know, you could cruise Mooney and everything, I guess. But anyways, we went to the fair, and we jumped the fence, because why spend our money, you know, getting into the fair when we could save it for booze and stuff like that, you know, because that's that progressive situation that, you know, comes on later on in my thing is why spend my money on anything when I need it for my alcohol, you know? Because what's more important than alcohol to me, you know, I'll eventually find out in my life. And so we jumped the fence, and then we get kicked out. And we end up back at the YMCA, you know, and we're drinking more booze and, you know, smoking weed and everything. And my friend Karma, he lived in apartments next door. And we would go from there, from the Y through, there's like this little house on the corner right there of Tulare and Court Street. You know, it's like still there. So I think it's like an insurance place or something. But back then it was a Century 21 or something. And they had this little small building in the back where they kept all, you know, like, the stuff that they would get from people's houses that people just left there, like TVs, like, you know, old brooms, you know, ashtrays, I don't know, whatever, because that's what we ended up with when we broke into the place, you know, kicking the door open, you know, thinking it was fun and cool and everything. And when we saw what's in there, hey, you know, my friend's poor, his mom barely, you know, making ends making ends, whatever. And she needs a TV, she needs an ashtray, she needs a broom, she needs a lamp, you know, she needs all this stuff that's in there, and these people don't need this stuff. So we go in there and we take it, and we decide to go back and look for more, you know, so we decide to sit in there and smoke our joint and everything and stuff, and a little while goes by, and next thing you know, I hear this, and so we look outside, and you know, we see this light in the sky, and we hear, you know, the helicopter, and then boom, on both sides of the driveway, because there's two ways to get in, cop cars come through, and we just book it. You know, everybody just goes their separate ways, and we go through the YMCA, over the fence, into the ditch, and as far as we could possibly get. And finally, we found like one of the bridges, and we hide under the bridge, thinking, "Oh yeah, everything's cool. You know, we're good, we're safe." And then next thing you know, this guy jumps down. He's got the light and he's got the gun and he's pointing at us. He goes, "You guys move, I'll seriously shoot," you know, like with all the cuss words and whatever, you know. I mean, I could probably cuss 20 times in this meeting, but that really doesn't, you know, need to be said. But anyways, he tells us to get out. They tell us to get out, and we jump over the fence. And as I'm jumping over the fence, grabs me behind, the T-shirt and stuff, and throws me on the ground. And then they talk about how they got a dog in the car, and that if we decide to get up, and he'll, you know, push the button, open up the door, and let the dog out. And all, like, you know, I thought it was funny. All we could do was laugh, you know. It's like, you know, because we're drunk out of our minds, you know, high as a kite and everything. And when you're young like that, you know, you just don't think, you know, anything really matters, you know. It's like, whatever, you know. I mean, it's no big deal. We're sitting in the police station laughing, you know. You could hear each other from one room to the other room, and it's echoing in there because it's, you know, like the rooms seem to echo, and it's funny. And then they take us to juvenile hall. And, I mean, that was like camp. That was like a vacation. You know, at least for me back then. I don't know how it is today. I haven't been in juvenile hall in, I don't know, like 30 years. You know, things probably have changed. But I just know that we got to kick it in the front, you know, on the table, or go outside and play cards and stuff like that. And I remember, I think my mom, I don't know if my dad came and visited me, but my mom came and visited me, and we were in there for a couple of days. And then I had to go in front of a judge, you know, and I'm like thinking, damn. This is the first time I ever go in front of a judge, and what's going to happen? I'm just, you know, this is the first time I probably experienced anxiety, you know. I'm thinking, you know, like, you know, this shit's going to hit the fan. And all he says is like, "All right, we got 80 work hours, you know, out at it's called Mooney's Grove for you, and $300 restitution, because the place doesn't even want to, charge any, you know, like, you know, file any complaints or anything like that, because the stuff you stole was probably worth nothing, you know." And once that happened, once the judge said that and everything, and you know, like, and you gotta be, I gotta let you guys understand that, you know, I have two loving parents that are still together, and that are still in my life, you know, two loving parents that, you know, became and it's hard to say this, became two of the biggest enablers in my life because of that love. I mean, because, you know, like, instead of, like, whipping my ass or something, instead of, like, you know, doing something, you know, like, to seriously put it in my head that what I did was bad, they sat down and talked to me and everything and just loved me, you know. And then for the judge to do that, it was like, I was thinking, if this is how easy life is, you know, I could go out and get drunk and get high and seriously steal and have the cops chase after me and then go have a vacation in a place like where everybody would talk about how scary and sketchy it is, you know. And dude, I'm down for this, you know. I'm ready to rock and roll. I'm ready to, you know, to get this life going. And I did, you know. After that, I got. My first, like, DUI, which at the age of 18 became a wet and reckless. You know, I was driving, you know, down Mooney. I wasn't even cruising, but I was driving down Mooney, and the car just happened to, you know, like, you let go of the wheel and it would veer to the right. Or at least that's what I thought, you know. I mean, I was so drunk that I thought it was veering to the right. When the cop pulled me over, that's what I thought he pulled me over for, you know. I mean, and I went to jail. And I sat in there, and all I could think about was like, man, what are my parents going to think, you know? Because they came, and I think they picked up the car that night and stuff, you know? And I was just, man, and what happened? They loved me, you know? And like they always did. And then I went in front of the judge, and the judge said, you know, we're going to give you a year of probation, 6 months, we're going to take your license away, and $300 fine. And I was all, that's it? Seriously? For you know, driving drunk? And I could have killed somebody, you know? I could have literally killed myself. I could have killed the passenger that was in the car. You know, all the things that I could have done. But see, I wasn't thinking that stuff at the time. You know, I'm thinking that now. But, you know, at the time, all I could think about was like, man, I'm ready to rock and roll. Let's get this going, you know? I just kept drinking, my drinking seriously started to get, you know, like to progress to the point where like I was drinking every day, you know, and I was seeing drinking as something that would help me overcome my fears. Drinking would overcome, you know, any situation, you know, that would come in front of me. You know, in my relationships, I would use drinking as an excuse to either ruin the relationship or create the relationship. You know, I found myself attracted to people or to women that drink, you know. And pretty much most of my life I was with what I would think were drinkers or alcoholics, but that's for them to find out. But that's what I was attracted to, you know. I mean... And let me see. And I was careless, you know. I was so careless in my life that I didn't care who I hurt or who I harmed. You know, I know when I go to make those, when I go over the four step again, and I make that list, and the list is probably as thick as this thing right here, because that's what I feel sometimes, because people come into my life, you know, recently people have come back into my life that I haven't seen in a while, and then God reveals things that I don't want to remember, you know, that I drank over, you know, I mean. I know there's a lot of people out there I hurt and I harm. You know, a lot of people that, you know, I disrespected. There's a lot of people out there that, if I really cared about you, then I wouldn't have done the things that I did. I wouldn't have showed up at your house as drunk as I was and break your whatever it was that was in my way. You know, I wouldn't have called you the next day and you wouldn't have answered, you know, because you didn't want to talk to me because of what I did, and I couldn't even remember, you know, because I got so drunk that, you know, and because I didn't remember it, I didn't think it was real. You know, I'd be like, seriously, nah, come on, dude, that wasn't me. You know, I didn't do that. And I'd be like, but why are you so mad? I mean, it ain't that big of a deal, is it? You know, I wouldn't understand why people were so mad. You know, that was something that I started to create in my mind, is like, you know, like, come on, seriously, dude, you can get over it like in 2 minutes. You know, I mean, oh, what I stole from you? Come on, it was only like $50, dude. That's nothing, you know. But to people, that was something. To you, it was something, you know. And to the girlfriends that, you know, I hurt, you know, that I cheated on, you know, the things that I said to them, the thing, you know, by rather going out, you know, on a road trip, you know, going, you know, to Oregon or Arizona or somewhere, instead of hanging out with them, you know, instead of going to family functions and stuff like that, I thought, you know, being with my friends and drinking and all that stuff is more important, and telling them, you know what, maybe next time. You know, I'd be like, why are you going to be so mad? Why does it even matter, you know? I mean, why do you care? Why do you care? What do I do? You know, does it really hurt you? Does it really harm you? What, you know, that I, you know, that I drank and that, you know, I'd rather be with somebody else than you. And these are the things that, you know, I would do. You know, when I was 26, I got another DUI. You know, I was I was beyond careless then. You know, I went with a buddy of mine and a couple of friends, and then the friend of mine, he's long gone. He passed away. You know, he just couldn't handle life, you know, on life's terms. You know, and we were at the river and we were swimming and stuff and drinking and, you know, doing other fun stuff. And I thought I had lost my wallet when we got to a buddy's house and everything. And I decided to go all the way back to the river and meet my girlfriend there. And we searched everywhere, and I was frantic. I was like freaking out because like it had like $40 in there. And that $40 would have bought me a lot of booze, you know, at the time. Or at least I thought, you know, because if I think about it right now, how many 40s I could get, you know, or how many bottles of Ancient Age I could get, you know, or what size of a bottle I could get, you know. And she begged me. She begged me just to come home, you know. And we lived right by there out in the country. And she's like, just come home, you know. Like, we'll look for it tomorrow and everything. And I was like, nah, the booze is calling me, you know. The party's calling me. My friends are calling me. The drugs are calling me, you know. I mean, I got plans. You know, you can go home. I got plans. Do what you got to do. You know, I'm going to go do what I'm going to do. You know, I'm selfish and self-centered. And so I did. And I went and I drank more beer and I did more, you know, lines of coke. And I went, you know, to the bar. And I called and I said, you know, hey, maybe you should come and get me. And she's like, why should I come and get you? You know, you didn't want to come home now. You didn't want to come home, you know, when I asked you. And I go, but I'm too drunk to drive. She goes, well, you can walk to your parents' house. They don't live that far from there. So I was like, yeah, I could do that. Or I could skateboard there. You know, I have my skateboard in the truck and stuff. But then I was like, as I was walking to my truck, I thought of a better idea. You know, faster, and, you know, I thought safer, and, you know, because it was, you know, late, 2 o'clock, I had to be at work at, you know, at 6:30. I thought, oh, you know, it's about 2, you know, almost 2 o'clock, the bar's going to close, I'm going to just drive home, and everything will be, you know, cool. You know, I'm high as a kite, you know, on coke, and I'm drunk, you know, and so I get in the truck and start driving down Center Street, you know, and I didn't think I was going that fast. You know, I mean, I wanted to get home because I got to be at work at 6:30 and I want to get a good night's sleep. And so the CHP decides to follow me and he pulls me over right, you know, on Giddings and, you know, on Main Street right there. And he's like, how you doing, Mr. Blackman? And I go, I'm doing all right. And he goes, you have anything to drink tonight? And I was like, oh, no, not me. No, I haven't had nothing to drink. And, you know, and the other one's on the other side looking in there. And his flashlight's, you know, like his light shining on the beer bottle, you know, that had rolled it from under the seat. You know, and you could see it, you know, shining and everything. And I was like, no, I don't have nothing to drink. He goes, well, what's that? And he goes, oh, I think a friend left that. You know, I think one of my friends left that. And he goes, where are you going? I go, I'm home. And he goes, where'd you come from? And I go, oh, a friend's house. And he goes, oh, you sure you didn't come from Shag Nasty's? And I was like, nah, I didn't come from there. And he goes, well, we just saw you walk out of there, you know, into the parking lot, you know, behind, you know, right there and get in your truck. You know, and so I spent a night in jail and everything and stuff. And, you know, I got a public defender, you know, because I wanted the public defender to know that it was entrapment, that, you know, that. Because I was wanting to know how he, you know, how they saw me, you know, how did they know that I was in the bar and all this stuff, and why me, you know, why did they have to pull me over? You know, there was probably like, you know, at least 100 people or more, I thought, at the moment inside that bar too, better drunk than me, you know, and there was, you know, I mean, why me? Why pick on me, you know? Why single me out, you know? And this time, though, when I went in front of the judge, he wasn't so cool, you know? You know, he took my license away for a year. And then I had to do 6 months of DUI class, you know? And then I had to do 6 AA classes. I thought they were classes, you know. I had to do 6 AA things and get my card signed so I could get my driver's license back. You know, I was like, And so I had to go sit, you know, at the Lano Club, you know, in one of those chairs against the wall and everything. And I didn't even know what was going on. You know, I thought, well, I'm in class, dude. So where's the teacher at, you know? Or what's going on here, you know? But the best part about it was is the Alano Club's right next to the Four Seasons, I think it is, and they got liquor there, or they got beer. So I knew that right after I got out of the meeting and got my court card signed, you know, I could go and get a beer. And, you know, I can go get what I was in there for. You know, because all I really wanted was my driver's license back. But the crazy thing is I stopped going to DUI class. The reason I stopped going to DUI class is because I didn't want to show up drunk. So I didn't want to show up smelling like alcohol, because there was this guy there that taught the class. His name was Butch. And I don't know if you guys ever had a DUI class or DUI school, but this guy Butch was an old sheriff, you know. And I remember him saying when we walked in, he said, if anybody shows up in this class and they smell like alcohol or they've been drinking, I'll give them a breathalyzer test. And if I find keys on them, then I'll know that they've been drinking and driving, and then they'll get another DUI, and I'll call the cops, and blah, blah, blah. He said all this stuff, and I was like, shit. I was like, you know, and I had been drinking. And so the whole time I was in that class, I was sketching out, and I was like, man. And I couldn't stop drinking, dude. You know, not even for DUI class, not even for a judge, not even for girlfriends, not even for my parents, you know. And so it was either me getting my driver's license back, you know, finishing these these DUI classes, or drinking. And I chose drinking. You know, I didn't want to show up there and get another, you know, DUI. I didn't want to show up there and get arrested. I didn't want to show up there and go in front of the judge again. So I quit going. And by me quit going, that means that I couldn't get my driver's license back. But that didn't stop me from driving. That didn't stop me from drinking. You know, and for like almost 8 years. Seriously, for 8 years, I didn't have a driver's license, you know. And I didn't drive, you know, the whole time in that 8 years. But when I had a chance, I did. You know, and I did it carelessly. And the messed up part about it is I did it with people in the car with me, you know. And sometimes I wouldn't even remember. I'd have people tell me the next day, dude, you were so drunk. When you were driving home, you were so drunk, I had to hold the wheel for you. When you were so drunk that you pulled... This guy told me one time, and I couldn't even believe this. I thought he was making this up. I pulled up in front of his house, but I pulled up in the street. You know, I didn't in the driveway or nothing, but in the street, I stop on Court Street, right by Tulare. Stop there. He gets out of the truck I was driving at the time. I get out of the driver's side and I commence to piss in the street. You know, and he's like just looking at me, and he's like, he goes, I was just like, Dale, what are you doing? And I go, I didn't do that. No, that wasn't me. And he goes, yeah, in the middle of the road. You know, just, and I'm like, seriously? And all I could think was that, you know, I could laugh right now, you know. I mean, I thought it was kind of funny, you know. I mean, and that was like, that was pretty much the normal for me, you know. I would black out, or I would just be so drunk that I would like, that's what I would do. I would just do crazy stuff like that and not remember, and I guess today I'd be grateful that nothing ever happened. You know, I didn't, you know, I'm not in prison. You know, I should be, but I'm not dead, and I was never in an institution. Fast forward to my last DUI, you know. In between all that stuff is pretty much just, you know, I could just, you know, a bunch of drinking. But my last DUI, I got in 2008, right about a year or less right after I got my driver's license back. You know, and I swore off that I was never going to drink and drive, and I found myself drinking and driving. And I would go to work drunk. You know, I would drink at work and I'd go to work drunk and I'd be careless. And I got behind the wheel one night, went back to the guys at work were having a work party, and went back to go to the party, and they weren't there. And the good side of me, you know, that good side said, you should just go home, call it a night. You know, I got to go work tomorrow for another guy, you know. And I said, all right, and I went home. But then the bad side of me, when I got home, said, you know, you got this 18-pack and a bottle of whiskey, and you got friends waiting downtown that are playing music and everything. Why don't you just go hang out with them? And I was like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea, but I'm not going to drive. You know, I've already been drinking a lot, and I promised myself I'd never drink and drive again and stuff. But I'll just drive to my friend's house, you know, and I'll park it there, and I'll leave it there. And so I did. I drove to my friend's house, and I went to the wagon wheel where my friend was working, and I had some beers and everything. And I didn't even touch the 18-pack really yet, or that bottle of whiskey, you know, because I was saving it for later. I just didn't know it. And then after I had a couple drinks there, I went to my truck where I had parked at the friend's house, and I said, hey, I'll just drive it downtown. You know, because I got an 18-pack in there and a bottle of whiskey, and I just don't want to be skating down the street or walking down the street with it and get, you know, get a public in talks, which I had many of, you know. And so I went it was a coffee shop, I think it was Tazria or something like that, it was the one on the corner where Paisano's is. It was a coffee shop at the time, and these people were playing music, friends of mine, and there was no drinking there or nothing like that, but I thought there was, so I went in there, you know, drinking, all drunk and everything, and I kind of, you know, started, you know, a little scene and everything, and I ended up at the Santa Fe, and I walked in there because I was going to drink, and I just didn't feel comfortable being in there, and I got in my truck, and I started driving down Center Street, and I got pulled over. And I seriously told the cop, I was like, why are you picking on me, you know? What is it about me that, you know? And to this day, I'm grateful for that cop, you know, because the cops, you know, he saved my life that night, and he saved the people that were in the truck's life that night, because, you know, with all the booze that was in my system, and the 18-pack that I still had that I really haven't even drank, and the bottle of whiskey that I hadn't even opened, I could have, you know, it could have been worse. And I ended up in jail, and I ended up with another DUI, and it was an 18-month program, 2 years license suspended, and a $2,300 fine or something like that. You know, and that took forever to take care of too. But I mean, I took care of it. But I didn't stop drinking, you know. My drinking progressed to the point where I went to San Francisco one time, and you know, this is the insanity of my drinking. This is the insanity of the disease, for me at least, how I see it, is I swore off all drugs, you know, for a while, because, you know, I had this, you know, thing with, like, I just had this thing about taking drugs, you know, and I was going on a trip with friends and stuff, and I was drinking alcohol, and they had Oxycontin. And so they asked me if I wanted some, and I said, no, I don't want that stuff. You know, I don't do drugs. You know, I mean, I do drugs, but I don't do drugs. And about 3 or 4 beers later, I was like, I'll have a little bit. You know, why not? Everybody else seems to be having fun. So I did some Oxy. And we get to San Francisco, and we get into a hotel room, and we meet two of our friends there, and they just happened to come from Humboldt with some weed, some mushrooms, and then one of them had coke. And so I was, you know, so yeah, the party's on, you know. Next thing you know, I'm doing coke, I'm smoking weed, and I'm eating mushrooms. And we go and we go out for a little while and we come back to the hotel room and we end up getting some other people to come and party, and next thing you know, I'm smoking crack, you know. And for three days, I'm just on a mission, you know. One of the craziest missions I've been on since this time, though. I forgot about this one time when I was young. I did ask a friend of mine for a cigarette. You know, and this is how rad my friends are. This is how wonderful and grateful I am for my friends. My friend decided to give me a cigarette. You know, I love drinking. I love drinking more than anything. My friend gave me a cigarette and I smoked it, and I couldn't light that cigarette. I was like, why can't I light it? So I'm sitting there puffing on it, you know, trying to pull on it, you know, drag it. And then finally, I light the cigarette, I just feel I just feel the lightest, craziest feeling in the world. And I'm like, smoking it, and I pass it to other people, and I'm smoking it, and I go, dude, what's up with this cigarette? It's crazy. And I just look, and him and his buddies are just laughing, and they're just having a good old time, and I'm like, whoa, what's so funny, you know? But it's like, but it comes funny to me because the situation that I'm under, and I find out, you know, he gave me a cigarette with embalming fluid. You know, PCP, you know, Sherm State. And it's just like, and I'm like, I start, you know, the anxiety though at first. The anxiety is probably the craziest thing ever, you know, the anxiety. But after that, it's just, I can't describe it, you know. I can't describe the feeling I felt, you know. But the 3 days of torture, you know, beautiful torture in a sense, because I was scared out of my mind, you know. And so I go back to the San Francisco situation, to where that was what it was like, you know. It was to the point where, like, the obsession that I have, the physical obsession I have with alcohol, and, you know, the phenomenon of craving that I have, you know, the physical craving, is that once I get a taste of something, or I get the taste of the alcohol, once I put it in my body, I can't stop. You know, it's like I'm on a full flight from reality. You know, I'm ready to go, and it's like, it's like the craziest, you know. I don't know. I'm sorry. I just. You know, I'm an alcoholic, you know, and it's crazy because I came here tonight and I wanted to share my experience, strength, and hope, and I go blank, you know. It's like, and so I try to think of what to share, you know. I guess I can share, the beauty of it. I can share the beauty of recovery, you know, because that's all really I know now. You know, all I know is that that what's in the book is real, you know. The 12 steps are real. Is it almost 8 o'clock?
Yeah.
I'm humbled. I'm sorry. My strength is that I got a sponsor today, you know, that I truly love, that, you know, that I know will teach me and show me how to live happy, joyous, and free. You know, the 12 steps are the most important part of that process.
you know, the fellowship and I like to thank AA. My name is Dylan. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you.